Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, President Obama issues a warning to North Korea. Ukraine's prime minister accuses Russia of wanting to occupy his country. An aid organization launches an anti-malaria program in sub-Saharan Africa. Palestinian moves toward unity lead to the suspension of talks with Israel. It's all ahead on International Edition. Sitting in again today for Susan Yaki, I'm Dave DeForest. U.S. President Barack Obama is in South Korea on the second leg of his current Asian tour. He issued a warning to North Korea. In a newspaper interview with a South Korean newspaper, Mr. Obama said, quoting, "If North Korea were to make the mistake of engaging in another nuclear test, it should expect a firm response from the international community," end of quote. At a joint news conference today with South Korean President Park Geun-hye, Mr. Obama said America's commitment to South Korea will never waver, and the U.S. and South Korea will stand shoulder to shoulder against North Korean provocations.
Threats will get North Korea nothing other than greater isolation. And we're united on the steps Pyongyang needs to take, including abandoning their nuclear weapons and ballistic weapons programs and living up to their international obligations.
The U.S. leader also expressed condolences to the families of the hundreds of children lost in last week's ferry accident in South Korea. Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk is accusing Russia of wanting to occupy Ukraine militarily and politically. Both countries are massing troops near their common border. Mr. Yatsenyuk warned today that Russia's actions could lead to a wider military conflict in Europe. He told an interim cabinet meeting that Russia wants to start World War III. U.S. President Barack Obama, meanwhile, is criticizing what he calls Russia's further meddling in eastern Ukraine, where pro-Russian separatists have occupied government buildings. Speaking in Seoul, Mr. Obama said he would talk to key European leaders about implementing wider sanctions in the event Russia further escalates the situation. Meanwhile, in eastern Ukraine, Ukrainian forces have attacked pro-Russian insurgents in the city of Slovyansk. VOA's Brian Patton has a report.
Ukrainian forces clashed with militants in the separatist-held city of Slovyansk on Thursday, days after acting president Oleksandr Turchynov ordered the resumption of military operations in eastern Ukraine. Interior Ministry advisor Stanislav Rachinsky confirms that five Ukrainian insurgents were killed in the attack.
The last information concerning the shooting in Slovyansk is that anti-terrorist forces have destroyed three checkpoints of separatists. Five terrorists were killed. From our side, there is one casualty. We still don't know exactly whether he is killed or injured. The operation continues.
Ukraine also increased its military presence outside the city of Donetsk, setting up a roadblock outside the city. A few kilometers away, pro-Russian protesters man their own roadblock. In the city of Makivka, a pro-Russian group dismantled the barricades it had built in front of City Hall. The group maintains a presence in the building but has allowed local officials back in. One member, Sergei Novikovsky, says the occupation of the building was meant as a peaceful protest.
We took it down ourselves because, anyway, barricades will never save us. And moreover, we are unarmed. We are peaceful citizens, and we are protesting peacefully the violent activity of the Ukrainian government.
In the city of Gorlivka, armed militia behind makeshift barricades maintain control of the police station. The group spokesman declined VOA's request for an interview, saying they see no benefit in talking to the media at this time. In the city of Mariupol, Ukrainian forces reported no casualties after clearing the city hall of pro-Russian protesters who had occupied it for more than a week. Russia also announced it is starting military drills near the Ukrainian border, raising concerns of direct military confrontation between the two countries. Brian Patton, VOA News, Donetsk.
The United States has accused Russia of orchestrating armed resistance in eastern Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry Thursday warned Russia of crippling economic sanctions if it fails to adhere to commitments it made earlier this month in Geneva. Russia has begun military exercises close to its border with Ukraine and says it is ready to step in to defend pro-Russian separatists. Sladetsa Hoch reports.
Secretary of State John Kerry said Thursday there is no doubt that Russia has sent armed men who have occupied government buildings in several eastern Ukrainian towns.
The world knows that peaceful protesters don't come armed with grenade launchers and automatic weapons, the latest issue from the Russian arsenal, hiding the insignias on their brand new matching military uniforms and speaking in dialects that every local knows comes from thousands of miles away. The world knows that the Russian intelligence operatives arrested in Ukraine didn't just take a wrong turn on the highway. In fact, we have seen soldiers wearing uniforms identical to the ones Russian soldiers wore in Crimea last month.
Kerry said Ukraine promptly began implementing steps it agreed to in Geneva earlier this month.
From day one, Prime Minister Yatsenyuk has kept his word. He immediately agreed to help vacate buildings. He suspended Ukraine's counterterrorism initiative over Easter, choosing de-escalation despite Ukraine's legitimate fundamental right to defend its own territory and its own people.
Kerry said Russia has acted to further destabilize Ukraine to pave the way for more incursions in the country's east. Russian President Vladimir Putin has said he would send troops into Ukraine to defend pro-Russian population in eastern Ukraine. Five separatists were reported killed Thursday in clashes with government forces dispatched to retake occupied government buildings in Slovyansk.
If the current authorities in Kyiv did that, then they are simply acting like a junta or a criminal gang.
Russia on Thursday began military drills close to its border with Ukraine. Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said Moscow had to act after, as he said, Kyiv deployed 11,000 troops and 160 tanks in eastern Ukraine.
We are forced to react to such a development in this situation.
Ukrainian ambassador to the United Nations, Yuri Sergeyev, told VOA Thursday that his government halted the operation in Slovyansk as soon as it turned deadly.
The Minister of Interior decided to suspend the active phase of this action to look what could happen after that and still addressing the separatists to surrender.
Sergeyev said Russia has done nothing to discourage pro-Russian activity in Ukraine's east or taken any other steps to fulfill its Geneva commitments. Kerry said international sanctions already have hurt Russia's economy and finances. He said if Moscow continues on its path of destruction, deception and destabilization, the cost will be much higher. Sladetsa Hoch, VOA News, Washington.
The head of the European Union's delegation to Russia has cast doubt on the effectiveness of last week's multi-party agreement to reduce tensions in Ukraine. Vygaudas Ušacas spoke to reporters as Ukraine called on Russia to explain its military drills near their border. Michael Eccles reports from Moscow.
Ušacas says there are no magic solutions to the problems in Ukraine. The Geneva Accords are the only mutually agreed-upon platform for resolution, he says, but they may not be working.
Unfortunately, in the eastern part of Ukraine, we have seen little, if at all, progress with respect to implementation of Geneva Accords, especially when it comes to the disarmament of illegally armed groups.
Ušacas called on Russia to step up its efforts to ease the tension. In eastern Ukraine Thursday, fighting between Ukrainian security forces and pro-Russia activists killed at least five militants. Russian President Vladimir Putin called it a crime and threatened what he described as consequences. Ušacas had this to say about the Ukrainian government's anti-terrorist operations.
We respect the right of Ukrainian government to defend its sovereignty and territorial integrity, but at the same time, we call upon all parties concerned, including the Ukrainian government, to avoid provocative actions.
As Ushatskas urged peace, Russian forces stationed just over the Ukrainian border began military exercises in response to the Kyiv government's operations. Ushatskas said more sanctions could be in the future for Russia.
The work is being done by the Commission in preparing a possible third stage of sanctions, which may involve economic nature.
He says sanctions could intensify if the Geneva Accords fall through. Those sanctions would likely involve more travel bans and asset freezes, not oil and gas embargoes.
Both parties, are very realistic that for the foreseeable future, we will remain mutually interdependent in terms of the energy cooperation. Russia needs cash, we need also Russian gas.
Meanwhile, the Interfax news agency reported that Russia's Gazprom has issued its Ukrainian counterpart Naftogaz a bill of $11.4 billion for a purchase shortfall. Ushatskas says that in the modern globalized world market, the EU must carefully think about what he calls its ultimate purpose in dealing with Russia.
The Russian Federation is different from what we expected, what we wished, and we have to acknowledge that and to deal with realities.
For now, those realities are uncertain as diplomacy strives to keep the war of words from transferring to the battlefield. Michael Eccles for VOA News, Moscow.
U.S. President Barack Obama says it may be time for a pause in Middle East peace talks while both Israelis and Palestinians consider their options. Mr. Obama told reporters today that it is still in the interest of both sides to seek peace, but that neither side has shown the political will to make tough decisions. He made the comments one day after Israel's security cabinet decided to suspend peace negotiations with the Palestinians in response to a plan by Palestinian rivals Fatah and Hamas to reconcile and form a unity government. VOA's Michael Richmond has more.
Your efforts.
Israeli spokesman Mark Regev.
Following the decision by the Palestinian government to forge an alliance with Hamas, an organization that calls for the destruction of the Jewish state, we have decided to suspend all the negotiations with the Palestinians. They cannot say they're a peace partner if they're embracing the most violent and extreme enemies of peace. Now we call upon the Palestinian leadership to reverse this negative decision, to annul this harmful agreement with Hamas. If they do so, we will be ready to return to negotiations immediately.
Before Israel's security cabinet suspended the peace talks, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu criticized the Palestinians' unity plan. He said Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who represents Fatah, is hurting ongoing peace talks. A senior official with the Palestine Liberation Organization, Hanan Ashrawi, said Israel's move to suspend the talks was short-sighted.
But Israel basically is looking for any pretext in order to scuttle the talks, in order to undermine the two-state solution, because it wants to impose its will and create greater Israel through a series of settlement activities, annexation of Jerusalem, and so on. This is really not just irresponsible and short-sighted. This showed really a lack of seriousness of intent and a certain degree of malice.
Despite Israel's announcement, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said he will never give up on the possibilities of peace.
Well, there's always a way forward, but leaders have to make the compromises necessary to do that. We may see a way forward, but if they're not willing to make the compromises necessary, it becomes very elusive. We will never give up our hope or our commitment for the possibilities of peace. We believe it is the only way to go. But right now, obviously, it's at a very difficult point, and the leaders themselves have to make decisions.
Hamas and Fatah said they will soon begin talks to form a unity government. The plan is meant to end a seven-year rift between the rival factions. Israel objects to any participation in Palestinian politics by Hamas, which has killed hundreds of Israelis in suicide bombings and other attacks over the past two decades. Israel, the United States, and the European Union consider Hamas a terrorist group. Mike Richmond, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan strongly condemned an attack Thursday on a convoy of UN barges taking supplies to staff and displaced civilians in Malakal, Upper Nile State. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
UN spokesman Farhan Haq told reporters the attack, which injured four crew members and peacekeepers, was unprovoked.
The barges came under small arms fire, and rocket-propelled grenades were also fired at the convoy of four vessels.
The UN mission has not yet identified the gunmen who attacked the barges as they made their way along the Nile River towards the UN base in Malakal. Both the Sudan People's Liberation Army and SPLA and opposition forces have denied responsibility for the attack and said their fighters were not present in the area. The United Nations said it received all necessary clearances from the government before the convoy set out 6 days ago. The UN Security Council has condemned two other recent acts in South Sudan, a massacre in Bentiu where more than 200 civilians were reportedly killed, and a mob attack on a UN base in Bor. The council has warned President Salva Kiir and his rival, former Vice President Riek Machar, that they must publicly state all attacks on civilians are unacceptable and hold perpetrators accountable. The council has said it is willing to take additional measures, which could include targeted sanctions on those sponsoring or encouraging unrest, should the violence continue. The council has also asked the UN Human Rights Office to investigate the massacre last week in Bentiu, where civilians were killed along religious and ethnic lines. Also Thursday, spokesman Haq said Secretary General Ban Ki-moon telephoned leaders in the regional bloc IGAD to express support for their efforts to bring South Sudan's government and rebel forces back to the negotiating table.
The Secretary General feels that the two parties need to be warned strongly of the consequences of their actions before the country descends into yet further violence.
The United Nations is sheltering 78,000 civilians at eight UN bases in Juba, Malakal, Bentiu, and Bor. Fighting between pro- and anti-government forces that erupted in South Sudan in mid-December has killed thousands and displaced more than 1 million South Sudanese. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
More than a week after some 230 teenage girls were kidnapped from their school, frustration in Nigeria's northeast region is deepening. Female leaders blame the central government for failing to rescue the girls. Heather Murdoch reports from Abuja.
More than a week after the girls were kidnapped, authorities say at least 190 are still missing. The dozens that are free escaped on their own, fleeing to safety through the bush. The girls that remain captive are believed to be deep within the Sambisa forest, where Boko Haram Islamist militants are known to hide out. Locals say they know roughly where the girls are, but they don't know how to stay alive long enough in the forest to rescue them. While no one has claimed responsibility for the kidnapping, it's widely believed that Boko Haram is holding the girls as spies, servants, or sex slaves. Dressed in black to show solidarity with grieving families, Aishatu Ngolde, a northern human rights activist, says the federal government's failure to locate the girls is tantamount to complicity in the crime.
Are you telling me that Borno State is so thick that no plane can see the ground? Why is there not been there in Borno over our children? They have been taken. We are all mothers. If it is Joshua's daughter that has been stolen today with the country to live, she would not.
Officials say security forces are using all means at their disposal to rescue the girls. Jan Saint-Pierre, the CEO of Berlin-based security consulting firm Mosicon, says if the Nigerian military launched a direct assault in the forest to rescue the girls, they might kill more girls than they save.
The forests there are really dense. Geography and all the elements that are really hard to really prepare proper operation the way Nigerian army wants to conduct it. And so a full-scale attack that would make them look good and also show strength is simply not feasible. You would end up with many, many more casualties and civilian casualties than you would actually get Boko Haram fighters.
The Nigerian military has been silent in recent days after retracting an initial report that most of the girls had been freed. Saint-Pierre says a rescue would go a long way to improve the image of Nigerian security forces, but it would require negotiations accompanied by precision operations.
For the girls right now, it's finding the proper back channels that would allow for negotiations and that would allow the girls to be freed. They would then save face.
Nigeria has been mired in the Boko Haram insurgency for almost 5 years now, and three northeastern states have been under emergency rule for almost a year. Boko Haram has been blamed for thousands of deaths in attacks on churches, mosques, schools, marketplaces, the government, and most recently, a bus station bombing in the capital that killed 75 people. And things are getting worse, with rights groups saying 1,500 people were killed in the first 3 months of this year alone. Some weeks, attacks are reported every day. Some attacks never get reported. Despite the chaos, Gambo Maman Gesau, another leading northern human rights activist, says the girls will not be forgotten.
Let them release the pure children. Poor children, let them release them. If they are not going to release them, we women in Nigeria, we are going to gather ourselves and march.
Besides air support and resources, female activists in Maiduguri called on Boko Haram militants to negotiate with the government, promising the militants motherly support towards rehabilitating them when the need arises. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
The non-governmental organization called Doctors Without Borders has launched a new malaria prevention campaign in several countries in sub-Saharan Africa. The campaign is aimed at protecting the most vulnerable population, children under the age of five. During the campaigns, at the height of the malaria season from July to October, young children will be offered what are called chemo prevention drugs. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Small children are at highest risk of dying from malaria, a mosquito-borne parasitic illness that claimed the lives of some 750,000 people in 2012, most of them children and babies in sub-Saharan Africa. Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, is planning to roll out mass seasonal malaria chemo prevention campaigns, known as SMCs, in the Sahel subregion to prevent new cases of the disease in countries where malaria is widespread. These nations include Senegal, Gambia, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali. In a 2013 SMC trial in Niger, the organization treated more than 200,000 children between the ages of 3 and 59 months with chemo prevention drugs. Trials of the chemo prevention strategy in the last 2 years have shown a reduction of up to 83% in simple malaria cases. There's a similar percentage reduction in the number of cases of severe malaria. Estrella Lasri, tropical medicine advisor for the group, says the campaign was launched at the urging of the World Health Organization.
What we do is we give drugs once a month that protect, and they protect the children for about a month during those 4 months of high transmission.
In Niger, during a trial in 2013, the anti-malaria compounds were made available in remote locations at health facilities, in the homes of village chiefs, and in areas where public health workers went door to door. The organization deployed some 2,000 community healthcare workers to educate families about the benefits of chemo prevention and to encourage them to take their children to a distribution site. Lasri says MSF chemo prevention campaigns do not use artemisinin-based drugs that are currently the gold standard to treat malaria infection.
We try to use different drugs so that even if we can potentially cause resistance, we're not causing resistance to the most effective drugs that we have for treatment.
If they find malaria in any of the children, Lasri says they treat it. But she says there's a shortage of rapid diagnostic tests in Niger, for example, hampering efforts to treat malaria in endemic regions. While not a miracle cure, officials say prevention drugs complement other malaria control strategies, including insecticide-treated bed nets. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And thank you for joining us today for International Edition on The Voice of America. By the way, you can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website. Check it out. It's voanews.com. Sitting in again today for Susan Yaki, I'm Dave DeForest in Washington. Have a good day. This is Today in History. On April 25th, 404 BC, Spartan armies defeated the Athenians, ending the Peloponnesian War. In 1599, Oliver Cromwell, leader of the English Revolution, was born. Cromwell, whose forces defeated those of King Charles I, took the title Lord Protector. He conquered Scotland and Ireland, expanded the English Empire, introduced electoral reform, and encouraged some religious toleration. Soon after his death, the English monarchy was restored. On this day in 1607, a Dutch fleet surprised a Spanish flotilla anchored at the Bay of Gibraltar. The Spanish warships, which were threatening Dutch trade in Asia, were destroyed. In 1859, construction began on the 163-kilometer-long Suez Canal that connects the Mediterranean and Red Seas. It took 10 years to complete. In 1898, the United States formally declared war on Spain. The U.S. victory in the Spanish-American War effectively ended the Spanish Empire. Spain ceded Puerto Rico, Cuba, Guam, and the Philippines to the United States. In 1908, American radio and television journalist Edward R. Murrow was born. Murrow is best remembered as a radio reporter giving on-the-scenes coverage during World War II. In 1915, the landings of Allied troops began at Gallipoli in Turkey. It was a bid to open a new front in the First World War and knock the Ottoman Empire out of the conflict. The effort failed and brought high casualties. On this day in 1945, Russian and American troops met along Germany's Elbe River, cutting the retreating German army in half. 2 weeks later, Germany surrendered in World War II. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As intercommunal fighting continues to roil the Central African Republic and the resulting humanitarian crisis worsens, the United States is increasing its engagement to help end the violence and restore legitimate governance there. W. Stuart Symington, a veteran Foreign Service officer with extensive experience in Africa, has been named to serve as U.S. Special Representative to the CAR. Previously stationed in Rwanda, Niger, and Djibouti, among other postings, he will play a leading role in shaping and coordinating U.S. strategy toward the CAR to end the violence, address humanitarian needs, and, with our regional and international partners, help move the nation toward an inclusive political transition process leading to democratic elections early next year. In this capacity, he will work closely with the African Union, the European Union, and United Nations, which are also deeply engaged there. The appointment of a special representative follows several steps our nation is taking to address the critical needs in the CAR. The U.S. committed $100 million this year to support African Union and French forces working to restore security there. This is in addition to nearly $67 million in humanitarian aid and $7.5 million for conflict mitigation and human rights programs. Ultimately, however, the people of the CAR hold their future in their own hands. We continue to urge all parties to end the violence, establish judicial mechanisms for ensuring accountability for those suspected of perpetrating human rights abuses, and move ahead toward a better future for their nation and people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.